This is translated from the Coptic, and this is from, this would have been from very early 2nd century religious experience, when there wasn't even any idea of Christians as Christians. There was the understanding that there was a community gathered around experience of masterful teacher, and what it was called really wasn't settled at that time. So the language seems a little strange at first, but listen to it. What this is language that's talking about the experience of the interior self, where the amulet and the talisman come together, where that ratio, that membrane of that ratio of universal relationality occurs. And this is language to bring the listener to that focus. All of these are examples of sacred language, sacred because it brings one to that focus. I have loved you. I have wanted to give you life, the living Jesus who knows the truth. This is the book of the gnoses of the invisible God by means of the hidden mysteries which show the way to the chosen people in rest to the life of the Father in the coming of the Savior, of the deliverer of souls who received to themselves the word of life, which is higher than all life, in the knowledge of the living Jesus who has come forth through the Father from the aeon of light at the completion of the Pleroma, in the teaching apart from which there is no other, which the living Jesus has taught to his apostles, saying, this is the teaching in which dwells the whole knowledge. And that's just an example, and I'll go into it more next week. Let me just give you a little bit from the Zohar. In the prologue to the Zohar, if you have the standard English translation from the Sonsino Press in 5 volumes, it begins on page 47, and the sequence carries itself through to about page 62. In the books of Jehu, after that prologue introduction that I read for you, there's a series of 14 levels through which Jesus, the esoteric Jesus, takes the hearers. In this prologue of the Zohar, there are 14 precepts which the teacher takes the student through to the realization of the beginning. And so the first section of the Zohar is named Bereishith, as in the beginning of Genesis, meaning not the beginning, but in the beginning. It's a gerund. It's an ongoing process. It's a relationality. That Bereishith is the membrane of interpenetration between God and the creation. Creation doesn't begin here at a dot. It occurs in the midst of the interrelation of God and creation. What is created in the Creator, there's an interrelation. And so Bereishith is that that gerund of the actual process that is happening. In the beginning, God created. And the Zohar gives that phrase. In the beginning, God created. And then, because it's the Book of Splendor, it goes into the discourse. Moses stayed, Leon, understanding the early Rabbi Ben Yohanan, and writes, this contains the first precept of all, to wit, the fear of the Lord, that is, it is written, The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's Psalm 111. As well as the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. It is the beginning and the gateway of faith, and on this precept the whole world is established. And he begins in that way. And then the second precept linked to that. The second precept is the one that is indissolubly bound up with the precept of fear, namely love. That a man should love his master with a perfect love. That a man, that which is called great love, the perfect love, that which is called great love. This is implied in the command, walk before me and be thou wholehearted. That's from Genesis 17. To be wholehearted in love. This is also implied in the verse, and God said, let there be light, which alludes to the perfect love called great love. Herein then is the precept for man to love his master truly. And then it goes on with the rabbinic midrash of developing this from it. And just give you a taste of the way in which it's expressed in Mahayana. This is the Ratna Guna Samkhya Gatha. This is from the early 2nd century in northwest India, about 130 AD or 130 Common Era, about like that, about the time of the great emperor Kanishka. Just so, whatever dharmas the victorious one's disciples establish, whatever they teach, whatever adroitly explain, concerning the work of the holy, which leads to the fullness of bliss, and also the fruit of this work, this is the Tathagata's doing. The Tathagata is the one who has gone beyond. For whatever the victorious one has taught, the guide to the dharma, his pupils, if genuine, have been well trained in it. From direct experience, derived from their training, they teach it. Their teaching stems but from the might of the Buddhas and not their own power. No wisdom can we get hold of, no highest perfection, no bodhisattva, no thought of enlightenment either. When told of this, if not bewildered and in no way anxious, a bodhisattva courses in the well-gone wisdom. In form, in feeling, in will, in perception, and in awareness, nowhere in them they find a place to rest on. Without a home, they wander. Dharmas never hold them, nor do they grasp at them. The victorious enlightenment they are bound to gain. The wanderer, Srinika, in his gnosis of the truth, could find no basis, though the skandhas had not been undone. Just so, the bodhisattva, when he comprehends the dharmas as he should, does not retire into blessed rest. In wisdom, there then he dwells. What is this wisdom? Whose and whence, he queries. And then he finds that all these dharmas are empty. Uncowed and fearless, in the face of that discovery, not far from enlightenment, is this enlightenment being then. To course in the skandhas, in form, in feeling, in perception, and in will, and in awareness, and fail to consider them wisely, or to imagine these skandhas as being empty, means to course in the ignorance of the signs, the track of non-production ignored. But when he does not course lost in the signs, in form, in feeling, or perception, in will, or consciousness, but wanders without home, remaining unaware of coursing firm in wisdom, his thoughts on non-production, then the best of all calming trances occurs in him. So you can see from the earliest Christianity, from the highest Judaism, from the earliest Mahayana Buddhism, there are always these ways of expressing. What are they expressing? They're expressing the qualities of experience that come in deep symbolic realization. Qualities of the deep self. And the language always has a kind of an ordering to it which implodes upon its own hierarchical system and turns it inside out. So that the personal experience is that there is no order, but it doesn't mean that it's chaos. It means that it's all of one continuity. And the order that had gone into it has been turned inside out and is given back out to the world. So that the world is ordered, but the inner person is free within that order. So there's a paradoxical double movement there. The snag comes when people get caught up into trying to possess that order of the world and be it themselves. Then you get the autistic person who has to control everything, because if he doesn't or she doesn't, who can tell what's going to happen? Well, we'll come back to this next week and have more. Thanks for coming. See you on Thursday night, some of you. Thank you.